Saturday Night Theater.
Don't forget the grocery list, Owen.
Sure. Make it a date, sir. Don't forget.
Come on, Georgie.
Bye.
Bye, sir.
Who was that? What is this grocery list?
Don't you know? That was Major Owen Evans. He only happens to be the son of the new Minister of Munitions.
Well, cut yourself a slice of cake, Major.
We present William Squire as the Minister in Storm Lantern, a play adapted for radio by Morris Mizaevich from the book by Richard Earl Lloyd George, with Noel Hood as the Minister's wife, David Buck as the Minister's son, Lawrence Payne as the Minister's secretary, and Ira Heath as the Minister's statistician. The time is the First World War. Storm Lantern.
Owen! Oh, Owen, darling, how lovely to see you. We sent the car to the station.
I got a lift from London. Well, let me look at you. You're looking well, Mother.
How long did you leave, darling?
I've got a week, a whole week. It was supposed to have started at midnight on the 4th, and I was tangled up with a whole mob going to Victoria when I saw a friendly face with a large, familiar cigar stuck in the middle of it. So I got a lift down.
That was nice of him.
Well, the place looks wonderful. Oh, what a relief.
Have you eaten, Owen?
Well, I have, but I can always eat again, of course. How's the old man?
Your father's in great form. It started to rain, so he said he'd go out for a walk. But, of course, he's expecting you, and I'm sure he'll be back soon.
Owen!
Hello, Jason. How are you? Oh, you're looking well.
You've got that in first.
Don't you think he's looking well?
He's looking fine.
Not too thin, but there are lines around there.
I think it suits him. Mrs. Evans, the generals have arrived. I have told him the minister was expecting his son and asked them to wait in the study.
Thank you, Jason.
Two top brass waiting their turn after an infantryman. Now I know I'm at home.
Darling, I think I'll go and arrange about a nice hot bath for you and tea.
Scotch, Owen.
Thanks, Jason. How is Father? Are you keeping him in order?
Oh, nobody can do that, but I'm very, very proud of him.
This new job, munitions.
Yes, he gave up the exchequer for a new ministry. An absolutely unknown quantity, can you imagine it? Giving up the most important post to that of the Prime Minister for a purely technical job which had to be built up from scratch. We started off with a desk and two chairs, but later in the day one of the chairs was requisitioned because they said it belonged to another department. Well, how's it going out there?
Well, I'm glad Father's taken over munitions.
It's bad, is it, Owen?
It just doesn't seem to make sense. We've got the men, of course, and we're supposed to be a great industrial power. But how can you explain the awful sense of inadequacy? We're absolutely outclassed. Everything's needed. Howitzers, grenades, machine guns, rifles, barbed wire, trenching kits, shells, landmines, lorries. I've made a whole list here.
Splendid. Let me have that, will you? I can see different handwriting here.
Oh, half the battalion had a hand in this. It's what you might call a petition. You'd better let me have it back. I'll make out a clean copy for you. This was written with a pencil stub in the dugout.
No. It's fine as it is.
Owen, my dear boy.
Hello, Father.
Oh, it's wonderful to see you. My word, but you've grown tough. Hard as nails. A real man, Jason, eh?
How are you, Father? He's looking fit, isn't he, sir? I've got the Generals Brewster and Crump in the study for you. I've told them you'll be able to see them later on.
Later, Jason, later. How long?
A week, starting the morning of the 5th.
Splendid. They'll give us a chance to have one or two talks. Are you feeling tired?
Well, it was very noisy out there.
And most of the noise was being made by them, I suppose. All right, you don't have to tell me.
Excuse me, sir. A special branch man to see you too, sir. I've told him to wait.
For the moment, perhaps you'd kindly leave us, Jason.
Yes, sir.
What's up, Father? Is it really difficult?
There are two wars, my boy. And as far as I'm concerned, the principal one is here in Whitehall. General Red Hot Brewster. They get promoted not on merit, but on a basis of senility. Seniority. Like cheese, the older they are, the higher. That's Brewster. Crump. Well, Brewster promoted Crump as his second in command. It's been the most ridiculous appointment since Caligula made his horse a proconsul.
What seems to be the trouble?
All the good generals in the past never had enough equipment. They're always complaining about shortage of armament and troops. Our generals are different. They tell me they don't need any more equipment. But do they believe this themselves? Can they possibly believe it? No, but the suggestion originally came from me, a civilian. What an insufferable nerve. What business is it of mine anyway? The job of government is to provide the war, isn't it?
Do you mean to say that they actually refused equipment?
Well, can you imagine it, Owen? It's like a soldier refusing a free sample in a Maison Tolere.
Excuse me.
You mean you can actually supply this stuff and they won't have it?
It's absolutely terrifying. I have to think up schemes to outwit them into accepting more equipment.
But leave this to me. I can handle them.
I'll be praying for you, Father.
Excuse me, sir, but Mr. Owen's bath is now ready, and Mrs. Evans says she will have tea for him as soon as he's had it.
Hello, Jessie.
Oh, welcome home, sir.
Thank you, Jessie.
I think you'd better go, my boy.
Don't worry about what we've been discussing. In fact, I think I got a bit of news that might cheer you up.
Good news?
I think so. So does Winston.
Oh, what have you two been cooking up together this time?
It's top secret.
I've given my oath of allegiance.
But you talk in your sleep. If you let this one out, you needn't worry about the Germans. I'll personally conduct the firing squad.
Well, it must be something.
Well, for security reasons, we call this thing a tank. It's a mechanized cavalry charger.
Oh, no, that's been thought of before. It won't work. No vehicle on wheels can go through barbed wire past dugouts and pillboxes.
It doesn't run on wheels.
No? How's it mobile, then?
Well, I can't play guessing games with you about our top secret inventions. Now go along and have your bath. I got a big meeting.
Well, good luck, Father.
Shall I tell the generals you're ready, sir?
By the way, this is a grocery list the boy brought home.
Let's have a look.
It's rather crumpled.
Crumpled and not very clean. What's all this different handwriting?
It was written in the dugout by several of Owen's comrades. I'll make a clear copy for the generals, shall I?
No. I want this particular piece of crumpled, grimy paper. I suppose this uneven handwriting can't be attributed to shell shock, can it? Mud from the trenches, Jason, eh? No little red stains. I suppose it'd be going a bit too far to experiment with a little red ink. Perhaps not. However, I can trust you to hand it to me at the psychological moment.
Indeed, sir.
How long have they been waiting?
About half an hour, but they're all right. I've explained about Owen, and they've got halfway through a bottle of brandy already.
Yeah. Well, there's this other chap. He's from Scotland Yard, I believe. Any idea how long he'll take?
Well, perhaps you'd better see him first. The generals will take up the rest of the evening, won't they?
Yeah, well, tell Chief Detective Inspector Taggart that I can give him 2.5 minutes.
He's just outside, sir. Come in, Inspector.
Thank you.
You have exactly 2.5 minutes. Inspector Taggart, sir.
Sit down, will you? Oh, thank you very much.
Well, now, what's this confidential matter you wish to see me about?
How are you, Mr. Evans?
Taggart.
Aye.
Taggart? Do I know you? There's something familiar.
Ah, you were a young MP and we were going on a midnight expedition into the underworld.
Bless me, Jack the Ripper.
That's right, you've got it now. And my word, what a night.
Here, Inspector, have a cigar.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes.
We never did catch him. I'm sorry it turned out to be a wasted night for you.
Wasted?
Well, we found no trace of the criminal.
I found something all right that night, Inspector. It wasn't altogether a wasted evening. No criminal was caught, and you couldn't find clues of any crime. What about the gin houses, the doss houses, the stinking alleys and grimy cellars, the rickety tenants, disorderly houses and thieves' dens? All this in the capital of the richest country in the world. I set out to investigate a crime that night. I found evidence of 10,000.
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't want to keep you. You must be a busy man, Inspector. Now, what do you want to see me about?
This is a security matter, Mr. Evans. We're rather concerned about your safety.
Yes. Now, what is it?
There's a young woman on your staff, a Miss Caroline Bishop. You know her, of course.
What about her?
She joined your staff last March.
If you say so.
A statistical expert, I understand.
Well?
We've just discovered that she's in the inner circle of the militant suffragette movement.
Caroline?
Yes. Now, I don't have to tell you, Mr. Evans, what happened to you in the past. You'll dismiss the girl, won't you? It's dangerous to have her here where she can take a pot shot whenever the mood's on her.
Well, we'll see what a little finesse can do in this situation. A woman is a highly susceptible organism, Taggart.
I don't know what you're up to, sir, but I don't like it.
Well, if you don't know what I'm up to, you don't know whether you like it or not, eh? Now, be a good chap and let me handle it my own way.
Now, highly intelligent and capable statisticians are not to be dismissed lightly.
Oh, please be careful.
Statisticians are not to be dismissed lightly.
Oh, please be careful, sir.
Yes, it was very friendly of you to call, Inspector.
Oh, good day to you, Inspector.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Jason.
Sir.
Before you call these chaps in, have I got my production charts?
They're in your desk, Minister.
Ah, yes, thank you. Now, two things. That little bit of paper.
Do I hand it to you, or does Owen?
Owen, brief him.
Sir.
Now, Jason, tactics. This is a crucial meeting. I'm going to use everything I know to break through their stonewalling tactics. Now, what have you found out?
Brewster.
Brewster.
Nothing in his private life. No vices, no financial involvements. But there is one small thing of interest. Do you know he's afraid of spiders?
General Brewster.
It may sound incredible, but he'd rather face a rhinoceros at full gallop than a spider.
Interesting. All right, I'll try to remember. Now, you've got me the other material I asked for.
Yes, I've put it on your desk. Brewster's second cousin married a man called Thomas Alfred Baddestock, who is a shareholder of Hamilton's, the small arms people. And I've got the names of others.
All right, fetch him in. Oh, I hate to use this sort of stuff, but heaven help us, what is there to do?
I'm sure you're right, sir. Gentlemen, the minister will see you now.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry you were kept waiting.
How do you do, Minister? How's your boy?
Major Limbry. Splendid, sir.
Now, sit down, gentlemen. Sit down.
Oh, there you go.
Now, then, I take it we've left our revolvers in the cloakroom.
Yes, I've talked it over with my colleague, Minister. We're quite ready to settle our differences and start a fresh page. After all, there's teamwork called for.
If we all pull together, we'll knock Jerry's six in.
Die on.
Yes, I don't have to remind you, Minister, that we have our boys at the front, too.
There's no need to make any protest about that, General.
We would like to speak very plainly, however.
Splendid.
Now, you've got some figures about equipment, Minister. Now, before you start firing them at us, eh? Let me give you just one statistic that we've computed while we were waiting for you in the study where you made us so very comfortable. Very good. Between us, General Brewster and I have 67 years of military experience.
What my colleague means to say is that we, too, have worked out certain figures of our requirements.
Yes, you see, you must consider, Minister, the question of mobility. Now, in the old days, troops were strengthened with great quantities of protective armor, and armies vied with each other in providing heavier and heavier armor for their soldiers.
And in the end, this defeated the whole purpose of defense by slowing down maneuverability.
Now, gentlemen, I'm not dismissing mobility, maneuverability, and general agility. I don't want to bog you down with unnecessary material, but surely this is not a proposal to equip your cavalry with 15th century armor. But gentlemen, this has become an engineer's war. All our national genius for inventiveness and organization in the machine age is at your disposal. More than 600 industrial firms have agreed to turn out weapons.
Yes,
sir. Here is the raw material of victory, gentlemen, and we offer it to you to hammer into practical military shape.
But who are these firms, Minister? What do they understand about producing weapons?
They're the top men in the country. Hard-headed manufacturers of commodities ranging from locomotives to sewing machines.
Yes, but they've had no experience producing arms, Minister. We are professional soldiers. We must know that our weapons are up to standard.
Yeah, yeah. We can't equip our fighting men with machine guns produced by sewing machine specialists. This war isn't a sewing circle, you know, eh?
Minister, you must appreciate that it is only a selected number of industrial firms who have had the experience to produce weapons to the required standard.
Yes, yes.
I have a list here. Now, these are old traditional firms whose experience goes back some 200 years.
But, General, they made javelins then. If I needed pikes and bows and arrows, I'd be delighted to place an order for them with these fuddy-duddies. What's going on?
Hmm?
A favored firm policy? Hmm? Is there any nasty nepotism going on between the War Office and these ancient armorers? If there is, I'll get to the bottom of it.
Sir, are you suggesting...
I'm not accusing anybody, but every situation which encourages the favored firm's policy spews out its opportunists, its adventurers, and practitioners of corruption.
Go look here, jacket man!
I've been accused of this sort of thing myself, and through very ugly experience, I've learned how these things function and create misunderstanding. I'm only telling you all this to explain the dangers of a favored firm policy. It creates jealousy, and jealousy is the father and mother of scandalmongering. When it rains, gentlemen, when the heavens open, we all get wet.
I think you're exaggerating the danger of this, Minister.
Trust my experience, General. You're in my territory now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to intrude.
Well, that's all right, my boy. Your intervention might be quite timely. Come in. Gentlemen, I'd like you to meet my son, Owen. General Brewster, Lieutenant General Crump. Sit down, my boy. My son was in the tropics when war broke out, and he traveled 3,000 or 4,000 miles to fight in your war, General.
I know your regiment well, young man. They're a credit to us.
He's just come back from the front on leave, and by pure coincidence, he was telling me about the sense of insecurity he felt about German shell fire.
Well, it's just that we feel we'd like to chuck just as much of the stuff back at them.
When Owen heard that I'd been made Minister for Arms Production, his comrades made up a little grocery list. Am I right, Owen?
Grocery list.
You don't happen to have it on you, my boy, do you?
Let me see, Father. Keys, lighter. Let's see the dresses. No, that's not it. There. There it is. Yes, I've got it, Father. There you are.
Yes, it's all that different handwriting. I suppose most of your comrades had a hand in this. Yes. Some of this is almost undecipherable. They were written in the front line, weren't they?
Yes.
The word howitzers is written with a very shaky handwriting.
Jackson was suffering from a bit of shell shock, I'm afraid.
Yeah. What are we going to do about this gentleman, eh? This crumpled bit of paper, grimy from the mud of the trenches, written with a stub of pencil on a soldier's knee by the light of a guttering candle. Look for yourself.
Quite, yes, sir.
Yes.
I shall deal with it.
No. Don't file it. I want to keep this little piece of paper. I've got a meeting at the Albert Hall on Sunday, and I'd like to be able to tell the people in that audience that this is the order I've received and to say that the goods shall be delivered. They shall be delivered, gentlemen.
I'll tell Mother you're still engaged for the time being.
You are, Owen. Well, gentlemen, shall we study these production charts?
We've already seen them.
How many machine guns do you think you need for each battalion, Brewster?
4 as a maximum.
I've marked 16. Now, do you seriously think that this is going to hinder your strategy?
Stop.
Now, don't tell me. Before you present me with any arguments, I think I ought to give you the benefit of one piece of strategy that I have acquired in my experience. Now, draw closer, gentlemen. Closer, please.
What is it?
Now, this is what I want to tell you. You're doing this all wrong. Don't you see, if you put in an order for more equipment than I can supply you with, you can always blame me for your defeat.
What?
What? I'm telling you something that you can use against me. Now, Brewster, how many machine guns do you want to order?
We've based all our tactics on standard weights of equipment, Minister.
4 When you march, General, go forward, for God's sake.
Yes, sir, we just don't trust those other firms. Do we trust them, Captain?
No, for God's sake, man, you heard my son say we need more shells.
Shells that may explode in our own trenches.
Exactly.
All right. I'm sorry to have to do this. Let me see that list of favored firms, the old faithfuls.
Well, we've given them to you. Here's our copy.
Now, Brewster, you yourself have no personal interest in any of these firms, of course, but do you happen to have a relative called Batherstock?
Tom? Oh, him. Oh, yes. Relative on my wife's side. I've seen him for a couple of years or so.
I see the name Hamilton's listed as one of the firms we've been placing contracts with. Don't you feel it a little indiscreet for your relative to buy shares in that company?
Damn it, man! What's it got to do with me?
How do you think it would sound if there was a rumor to the effect that you resolutely refuse contracts to other firms, but the one in which your wife's relative invests his money is favored by the War Office?
You're a bloody wicked...
Thousands of shells in the Hamiltons. My sister's got shares into them herself.
I'll deal with you in a minute. Now, listen. I know there's not a shred of connection between your favored firm policy and your wife's cousin's husband. But even if you two beat me up so that I have to crawl on my hands and knees to get there, I'll still get up in the house and tear every stitch off your back.
Stop! Apologize!
Now, don't move.
Oh, are you talking to me?
Don't move. It might run up your leg.
What?
A spider.
Oh, no! Where?
Don't flap. It's gone now.
Down, Sam, for goodness sake. Don't you see he's pulled a flanker? There's no spider.
No, crap.
Don't sit down, man. He's made a fool.
No.
Gentlemen.
You insisted on 4 machine guns, and I suggested 16. Let's compromise. 20. Setting our production targets at the same ratio. 500% increases. You'll have fortnightly reports as to our progress.
All right. But we're placing a firm order for this lot, and if you're late with delivery, we'll nail you to the pole, sir.
Don't bother to see me out.
Beg your pardon.
And good day to you, too.
Success, Jason. Agreement. Oh, Jason, what a villain I am. Sometimes I succeed in frightening myself. I worked the spider. Poor old Brewster.
Oh, they deserve it, sir. Congratulations.
Good. Now, another thing, Jason. Caroline Bishop.
Sir.
Why did you engage her?
Well, she had first-class qualifications, sir. Is anything wrong?
Do you know she's a militant suffragette?
Lord, no. Are you sure about that? Good heavens, I have to get rid of her at once.
You think she'll want to stick a knife in my back, eh? Was it Charlotte Corday who butchered Mara when he was taking his bath?
Well, I don't necessarily see it taking place on quite such an intimate occasion.
Touché. Anyway, let me have a look at the girl.
I really think you shouldn't take such chances, Minister.
Now, don't worry, my boy. I'll deal with her.
Well, she's been waiting in the anteroom, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The young lady, sir.
Thank you, Jason. That'll be all for the moment. Miss Bishop. Mm-hmm. Now, sit down, please, young lady. Jason told me that you're an excellent statistician.
Yes, sir.
Send an official memo to the Director General of the Arms Production Committee.
Sir.
I am pleased to inform you that agreement has been reached with the General Staff about our production targets. 500% increases in all categories of weapons to be delivered by yesterday. But earlier will be appreciated.
Oh, congratulations, sir.
Thank you, my dear. It is exciting.
All categories of weapons?
Everyone.
What about ambulances?
Ambulances? We'll send those to Kaiser Willy. I'll settle for guns. No. There's something I'd like to ask you, Miss Bishop. What is your opinion of women's role in the war effort? You know, we've plans to have the young women and housewives working in the factories.
Do you really want to know what I think? I think it's a very fine mess you men have got us all into. And now, I suppose, we're being asked to show our appreciation and loyalty by doing work that we've never been trained to do for wages far below what would be paid to the men. And afterwards, when we've helped to get you out of this mess, we'll be bundled back into the kitchen and the nursery and told that we're not really fitted to have a voice in our future and the future of our children. And then the whole thing will start all over again.
No, my dear, you'll see that it will not be the same. You know, last week I visited the old village where I was brought up. I wandered through the woods familiar to my boyhood. Now I saw a child gathering sticks for firewood, and I thought of the hours I spent in the same pleasant and profitable occupation. For I also have been something of a backwoodsman. And here is one experience taught me then which is of use to me today. I learned as a child it was little use going into the woods after a period of calm and fine weather, for I generally returned almost empty-handed. But after a great storm, I came back with an armful. We are in for rough weather now. We may even be in for a winter of storms. It will rock the forest, break many a withered branch, and leave many a rotten tree turned up by the roots. But when the weather clears, you may depend on it there'll be something brought within the reach of the people that will give warmth and glow to their grey lives. Something that will help to dispel the hunger, despair, the oppressions of the wrongs which now chill so many of their hearts. And women will so nobly rally to our help, will share our right to lend their voice in the highest councils.
Yes, Mr. Evans.
And when women have the franchise, when that golden day breaks, I only hope that they will not lose their taste for wearing a pretty petticoat. I hope you won't insist on the right of being a cement mixer. On the subject of femininity, some of my views are decidedly old-fashioned. How are you going to do it?
Mr. Evans!
We're going to do it with a stiletto? Pills or a homemade contraption of glycerine and nitrates? Well,
I don't understand you. How did you find out?
When were you going to time it for? Derby Day? Michaelmas or Halloween?
You knew all the time. Why didn't you have me arrested?
Oh, you're not such a desperate character after all, are you?
Oh.
Here, give your nose a good blow. Oh, no, don't worry. Nothing's going to happen to you.
You mean you won't arrest me?
I suppose you were determined to prove yourself a heroine.
I wasn't really going to blow you up. It was to be a demonstration of a suitable occasion. I was the inside woman. But why did you calmly send for me when you knew that...
Are you really a dangerous woman, Caroline? How fascinating. Tell me, have you ever stood on top of Vesuvius? I was in Naples when Vesuvius started getting lively again. All my hotel friends made a beeline for the nearest railway station. But I climbed to the top of Vesuvius and stood at the mouth of the crater, listening to the rumblings and watching the black smoke and little spurts of fire like a huge angry cat licking its lips. I think you'd have enjoyed it too. It was one of the most exhilarating moments of my life.
Standing there singing Welsh hymns.
Clever girl.
I suppose that's why you love storms. Yes, of course. I've seen you go out in the rain, waving your shepherd's crook, with your cloak flying in the wind, looking like some terrible villain from Italian opera.
But that's exactly what I am. You know what I think, young lady? Instead of some noisy mob demonstration, you should try to make your point with feminine strategy. Did Cleopatra tie us off the railings, eh? Did Pompadour go on hunger strike? No, they waggled their pretty bottoms once or twice, and before you could say alimony, they had their hot little hands on everything they wanted. This isn't a personal opinion. Everybody knows about Cleopatra.
Yes, sir, but please...
Oh, don't you think the role of Mark Antony suits me?
But please, Mr. Evans. I have to go now.
Yes, of course. You know, perhaps I'd better have some figures from you. Come to my study after dinner.
Yes, Minister.
Hello, Morgan Evans here. May I speak to Sir Beerbohm Tree? Herbert? Yeah. Look, I want your advice. I'm speaking at the Albert Hall on Sunday. You know that damned echo. Well, I want to project my voice so the words going out don't hit the words coming back. Yes, it's a barn of a place, I believe. Well, how would you cope?
Hey, what do you know? This is all our stuff.
Hey, Owen! What have we got here? An ice step bird!
Sir?
Yes, Jason. We've had the phone call.
Just this minute.
Yes?
It's all over, sir. The campaign worked.
Oh, I knew it.
News from the palace is that the PM's resignation was handed in early this morning.
Thank God. At last my hands are free. I had to do it. You know I had to do it.
Yes, that's true. You're the only man for the job.
You mean that?
I swear it. You had to do it.
I didn't do it alone, you know. No, I had tremendous allies. I think I can say we're all entirely disinterested. The proof is that they were from every party, right, left, and center. We had to form a united front. Fleet Street, that's where the power is. Friends in Fleet Street. Yeah, but you know, it's easier to get rid of a prime minister than a general in wartime. That's a lesson we mustn't forget. The real work is before us. Well... I suppose I shall get a summons to the palace any time now.
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you, too.
What is it?
A newspaper man has got hold of the story of your affair with Caroline Bishop.
Oh, damn and blast! Oh, never mind, it's not serious. Nobody will dare attack me now.
I know, but this newspaper man is stupid. He's a Welsh Anglican, and his editor is a Welsh Anglican.
Oh, heaven, help us! What am I to do? By the way, who is Caroline Bishop?
You must remember, sir. Last year.
Oh, yes. The suffragette. Goodness, I took all the ginger out of her crusade, didn't I? Yes, you're right. It's no laughing matter.
Did I tell you that story about my feud with the Anglican bishop? One night our party planned a counterblast, and I appeared on the platform, and the chairman introduced me. He said, "We all know that the Bishop of St. Asaph is the greatest liar in creation, but thank goodness, yes, we have in Mr. Morgan Evans a match for him tonight." These Anglicans. What are we going to do? Who is this writer?
I thought it best to let you see him, have a personal word. He's just arrived.
Now, how much can he prove?
Well, I don't suppose he can actually produce a photograph of you in bed with her.
That's it, brutal but true.
Well, I had a word with him, and he's certainly got some proof. Enough to write a piece, anyway.
Do you think he would really dare do this to me at the present time?
Oh, don't forget, sir, there's a whole army of VIPs in your own party, in the Tories, among the Labour backbenchers, who would be delighted to see you embarrassed, to say nothing of the general staff. Scandal brought down Parnell, Dilke. You haven't forgotten.
Oh, what a curious world we live in. Here am I, the foster son of a shoemaker, who is about to become this country's war leader. I could only have achieved this on the simple grounds that I'm the only person fitted for this job. But because I relax after an 18-hour spell of work with a little slap and tickle in my study, social foundations tremble.
The journalist, sir. He's 36, pompous, self-righteous, and a bit of a fool. He works for one of the Cardiff dailies. He seems to be flattered to be summoned to see you, but he won't easily be shaken.
Mm. 36. Mm. And if he's a reporter and able to travel from Cardiff, he's able-bodied, isn't he? What does the army have to say these days about an able-bodied young man of 36, Jason?
Yes, sir. I didn't think of that.
No, we'll have to do this very carefully. We have to cope with it with the hot and cold technique. You'll do the threatening, I'll do the bribing. I've got to be the hero, of course.
All right.
All right, that's one. Now tell me as soon as there's any news from the palace. What else?
The generals are here, sir. Crump's brought his plans for the offensive.
Yes, now what's my opinion about that?
Well, I think it's a crackpot scheme, but then, of course, I'm only an amateur.
Why do you say that?
Well, he wants to attack through a reclaimed swamp. And in August, at the time when there's been regular monsoon weather for the last 30 years.
He says that summer is the best time for an army to attack, and we're supposed to have the advantage of surprise by attacking through a reclaimed swamp. I mean, if you think it a crackpot scheme, then the Germans will probably think so too. Well, we've got the ordnance requirements all worked out in any case, haven't we?
The departments have worked out all the requirements for supplies in every detail.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to make a mistake in them.
A mistake?
Yes, an unimportant one, but a mistake.
In what, sir?
Anything. Gumboots. How many pairs of gumboots have you on order? Whatever it is, stick a knot on it.
Very well, sir.
And when we discuss the figures in your presence, you'll have to draw my attention to it.
I see. Well, yes, sir.
Right, that's all, I think. Now, we'd better deal with this young fellow. What's his name, the reporter?
His name is Hughes.
And his first name?
Hugh Hughes.
No jokes, Jason. If there's any jokes to be made, I'll make them.
Yes, sir.
Morgan, you know you have these visitors again, the generals. Shall I give them a meal, or are you going to be busy with them?
Oh, Catherine. I'd like to have a chat, my dear. Yes, later, Jason.
Let me know when you need me, sir.
I have something to tell you, Cathy.
What is it? What's wrong this time?
My dear, there's nothing wrong, at least nothing serious. But there's something wonderfully right. The Prime Minister has handed in his resignation, and I expect a courier from the palace any time now.
The premiership?
Darling, I think the King is going to ask me to form a new government.
Oh, Morgan.
You see, darling, all our years of struggle are to be crowned, and I want you to know that I could not have done it without you.
Morgan, my dear.
It's not quite settled yet. You understand there are still difficulties and problems. I mean, some of the Prime Minister's friends in the cabinet have sworn that they won't serve with me.
What have they got against you?
Against me personally, nothing. But we come from a different background. I mean, these are old school friends of the Prime Minister. We are faced with jealousy and caste solidarity. But I can overcome it, and I shall. With your help.
How can I help you?
You can help. I'm going to be absolutely frank with you, Catherine. My enemies have tried to find every way to discredit me. They stopped at nothing, even to fabricated scandal about me. I mean, you know very well, my dear, how vulnerable a public man is. I mean, I've only got to exchange a polite word with a woman at the reception and tongues start wagging. I mean, how many times has that happened in the past?
Oh, Morgan, not again.
Now, don't misjudge me. You know, I only have to smile and those damned hussies start boasting that they made a conquest of me.
What's happened this time?
Well, there was a young woman on my staff. I haven't seen her for months now. She left at the beginning of this year. In fact, I could hardly remember who she was when I was told about it.
What are they saying?
Well, they're linking my name with hers. They've absolutely no proof whatever. All that happened was that when I was working late, as you know I have to, my dear, she invaded my study one night on the pretext that she wanted some letters signed. I went through the correspondence with her, and then she had to check something in one of the letters, so I took a short nap. I mean, you know how it happens. I can sleep anywhere. Well, I just put my feet up for 5 minutes, and when I woke up, I found my tie unfastened and my shirt unbuttoned. I mean, she said she was making me comfortable. Well, I'm afraid that's how we were found together by another member of the staff.
Oh, Morgan, what a terrible liar you are.
Give me the Bible.
No, no, I won't have you blaspheme.
Give me the book. I shall swear by all that's holy.
I won't have you adding any more sins to your conscience.
All right, my dear. Believe it or not, as you will. But I've been in the front line for 2 years now. I fought the battles at home as well as those in France. I've had to fight every kind of bitter opposition. I've worked 20 hours a day. I haven't slept. I've gone without rest and every solace. Why? Am I a war profiteer? Am I a poster hero who basks in his artificial glory? Others have made millions out of the war or live with the sound of perpetual applause in their ears. I've just done a job of work. The king wants me to form a government. Am I doing this for ambition? Was it ambition that prompted me to give up the chancellorship for a new unknown ministry and involve myself in technicalities for which I had to go to school all over again? But I willingly made this sacrifice, and I ask as my right for sacrifices from you. Yes, my dear, sacrifice your pride, stifle your jealousy, forget that I'm a husband, and remember that I'm a pilot trying to navigate a storm never before experienced in the history of our country.
You don't have to make speeches to me. Morgan, spare me your eloquence. I'll do what I must for Owen's sake. He's told me what we owe to you.
Oh, my dear.
What is it you wish me to do?
Nothing, almost nothing. Well, there's a young man waiting for me in the study. After I've interviewed him for a few minutes, all I want you to do is to come in with a tray of coffee. Hmm?
No. No, Morgan. Please, don't touch me.
Mr. Hugh Hughes.
Oh, indeed.
From the Cardiff Echo, Minister.
How do you do, sir?
Oh, busy, very busy, Mr. Hughes, as you see. We have to keep the pipelines flowing, don't we? Still, I always have time for my friends from the press. What can I do for you? No, don't go, Jason.
Mr. Evans, sir, this may sound like impertinence, but my editor has asked me to interview you about a certain matter of importance in connection with your own personal life. My editor feels that in these days particularly, our leadership shall give an example of righteousness and uprightness. So many of us forget today when our physical well-being is in danger that it is our immortal soul which is important. Mr. Evans, sir, have you always followed the true path?
Mr. Hughes, the minister isn't here to protest his honor. If you know anything to suggest that he is not an honorable and upright man, it is for you to prove. Otherwise, you must understand that that question is a damnable piece of impertinence.
No, Jason. The young man is earnest and zealous, and obviously he's only doing his work as a good journalist. There's nothing personal in all this, of course, Mr. Hughes.
Oh, of course not, Mr. Evans. But I have my duty as a citizen and professional man to ask you this question.
Well, my young friend, as you ask me, on behalf of your Welsh readers, you obviously have a right to know these things. And the answer is that there is nothing whatsoever on my conscience.
Come to the point, Hughes, of what are you accusing, Mr. Evans?
I'm afraid it is immoral behavior with a certain young lady formerly a member of Mr. Evans's personal staff.
Have you any proof?
I regret to say yes. We have corroborative information from another member of Mr. Evans's domestic staff.
Oh, he's talking about Caroline Bishop, Minister. She was on our staff, that is true.
Caroline Bishop? Do I know the girl?
Well, she left our employment almost a year ago, Minister. I doubt whether you will even remember her.
Who's the other person?
Oh, somebody else we had to dismiss. She was directed from a rather redundant sinecure post to factory work.
Well, Mr. Hughes, that doesn't amount to very much, does it? How well do you know these people?
Well, it is true I've only known them a short while.
Ah, you mean since they brought you the story? Do you know that that woman, Caroline Bishop, was a militant suffragette and a sworn enemy of Mr. Evans? Do you know that the suffragettes tried to murder Mr. Evans in his own home? That they planted a bomb? And as a result of this criminal piece of folly, members of their organization were sentenced at the Old Bailey to terms of imprisonment.
But that wasn't Miss Bishop. I've checked her background and know nothing against her. She has no criminal record.
Nor have many other sworn enemies and opponents of Mr. Evans. But that doesn't mean that they wouldn't stoop to all sorts of devices to prevent him from doing his indispensable work effectively.
You know, this matter is really more simple than it may seem. I have a large staff here. Because of the war, it is predominantly feminine. But Mrs. Evans has never seen fit to object to the presence of these ladies in my home. Oh, I think you'll have to find some rather stronger proof than what you've told us about.
If you don't prove such an accusation up to the hilt, Mr. Hughes, I can promise you that both you and your paper will have the biggest libel damage claim in the history of Welsh journalism.
No, Dresden, my boy, there's no need for any of this. I'm sure Mr. Hughes is a reasonable man. He's entirely disinterested. All he wants is to see that justice is done and the high standards that one expects from our leaders are maintained as an example to the community.
I'd like to have it clear from you, Mr. Hughes. Mr. Evans has denied this accusation in respect of Caroline Bishop and this other person. Do you give us your assurance that you accept us?
I shall report what you have said, Mr. Evans. But naturally, I am not authorized to give any assurance that my editor will not print my article.
I understand, Mr. Hughes, that you are 36.
Yes.
And you obviously seem to be able-bodied.
Oh.
Is there any particular reason for your military deferment?
Jason.
No, really? Excuse me, Minister, but I must insist on this. Mr. Hughes has questioned your character.
It's true.
Well, what's your explanation, Mr. Hughes?
I don't have to give an explanation about that. I've already appeared before an official tribunal and satisfied them about my objections to fighting in the war on certain religious grounds.
Yes. Let me see. Fighting in the war. Jason?
Yes, sir.
Aren't we forming a special corps of stretcher bearers?
Oh, quite right, Minister. Brave fellows. Genuine pacifists, but honorably serving their country in an entirely non-combatant way there. Amid flying shrapnel and whistling bullets, they succor their wounded comrades in the heat of battle.
Oh, no, no.
That should satisfy your immortal soul, Mr. Hughes.
No, Jason. I think this must be left to Mr. Hughes's conscience.
Nevertheless, I think I'll drop a line to Mr. Hughes' editor about this special corps. You know, Minister, how often you've been reproached about protecting young, able-bodied men when middle-aged family men have been called up.
Yes, it is a problem.
Nevertheless, if I have genuine proof of this accusation, Mr. Evans, I feel honor-bound to do my journalistic duty.
Well, exactly, Mr. Hughes, if you have genuine proof, but what does that amount to? I mean, are we going to take as gospel the gossip of two rather disgruntled females who've been directed from rather comfortable jobs to factory work? I approve of your high journalistic standards. It is a rare and refreshing thing these days. And I'd much rather see you carve an honorable career for yourself for the future. Oh, I don't want to send you into battle, Mr. Hugh Hughes. I'd rather have you in Who's Who.
Oh, ma'am?
Oh, please don't get up. I'm sure you would like a hot drink after your long journey, Mr. Hughes.
That's very thoughtful of you, my dear.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'll leave you, gentlemen.
No, Kathy, my dear, don't leave. I'd like you to stay and meet Mr. Hughes. He's from Cardiff.
Oh, really? We have many friends there, Mr. Hughes. We always welcome our friends when they're in foreign parts.
Mr. Hughes has asked me a rather personal question, Catherine. It's in connection with a young lady who was on my staff about a year ago. Do you remember her? A Caroline Bishop.
No. No, I don't. I'm afraid I know nothing about her.
But Mr. Hughes seems to think that I do. Well, come along, Mr. Hughes. You had a certain accusation to make about this young lady. Well, would you kindly repeat it?
Milk and sugar, Mr. Hughes?
No. Yes, two lumps, please.
Well, Mr. Hughes?
No, Minister, I've decided I've nothing to ask you. Thank you for granting me an interview, Mr. Evans. I have a long journey, and I think I ought to be on my way.
Oh, I do understand. Now, look after yourself, young man. The slush on the roads is very treacherous.
This way, Mr. Hughes.
Oh, Catherine, let me help you.
I can manage. Leave me be, Morgan. There's nothing more for us to say to each other. Just open the door for me.
Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Evans. May I help you with that?
No.
Next case, Jason. Don't forget, gumboots.
Yes, sir.
What are you grinning at?
Mr. Hughes, I'd much rather have you in Who's Who. Yeah, all right, sir. Gumboots.
Now, that's it. Now, one other thing. If the King's messenger arrives, interrupt us. And I want full drill with fanfares, general proclamation, and a 10-gun salvo.
Yes, of course. You won't hear their groans for bursting rockets. This way, gentlemen.
Good day, Mr.
Good day, Minister.
Gentlemen, now please be seated.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you.
Now, I understand there's only one thing on the agenda today. Crump's offensive project.
It's about time we had your approval of that, Minister.
Yeah, well, I've given you the guns, so now you're anxious to use them on me.
We've got to get out of the doldrums, Minister. This stalemate must end, or we'll be defeated by sheer boredom.
Yes.
Well, I must tell you frankly, gentlemen, that I'm skeptical about our capacity to launch an offensive. I don't like the idea of launching it in a reclaimed swamp where the irrigation system can be smashed up after a few gun barrages.
We've been over all that, Minister.
Yes,
the whole beauty of the scheme, if I may say so, is that no one will expect us to launch our attack at that particular time and place for the very reasons you've given. And we'll have the inestimable advantage of surprise.
Exactly.
Let's see, Brewster. As a matter of interest, do you recall how many machine guns you said you needed? As a maximum?
Oh, that's not...
That was some time ago.
And I remind you, 4, you said. 4. And I had to trick you into agreeing to 20. How many machine guns are we equipping our battalions with these days? 48. Need you feel surprised, gentlemen, when I point out to you that I have good reason for thinking that you tend to underestimate your requirements, particularly for an offensive.
And you, sir, are the better judge of military problems than we are.
Do you really want me to answer that?
Come, gentlemen, don't let's bicker about past differences. We'll acknowledge our great indebtedness to your work in the arms ministry. All we're saying now is that the wonderful flow of arms has made it possible for us to crack down on the enemy and smash him.
You think that the Germans haven't been able to match our flow of arms? What assurance can you give me that we have an advantage in weight of armor?
It is not necessary to have a total preponderance of weapons. Right, the whole point about the strategy, if I may be allowed, is to have the initiative in attack. And for that, local superiority of firepower is all that's required. We don't have to break through the entire front, Minister. Look here, let me show you, sir. Now, look here. There, and there. Now, these three parts of the front are the only ones at which it is necessary to achieve a breakthrough. In 48 hours, Minister. Yes, that's what I said, in 48 hours. Our concentrated bombardment and infantry attacks will achieve the rupture. Before the irrigation ditches are churned up and before the weather bogs us down in the mud, our cavalry will be through, and then havoc! We will roll the Germans back into the North Sea.
General, if wars could be won by making speeches, then I'd be confident that with your assistance we could make rings around the Germans. But we are dealing with the lives of our countrymen.
Oh. It's no good. I told you it was no good, Sammy.
No. It has to sink in. Got to be digested.
Digested is no good. You'll never agree. We're wasting our time.
What's all this?
Good day to you, Minister. This is the last you'll see of this little scheme. But I promise you it won't be the last you'll hear of it.
What's up, General? What are you trying to say? Don't use tactics with me, if you please.
You had several weeks to make your mind up about this. My view is that you are not able to make a decision.
Not able to make a decision?
No, Minister.
Out with it. Out with it. What are you trying to say?
I've said all I want.
What's he getting at?
If I may speak plainly, Minister, this is no reflection on you personally. Please don't think that we're questioning your moral courage. But the general feeling at headquarters is that a war minister with your strong bias for peace and humane consideration will never give us our chance to launch a necessary offensive.
Right. You mean my anti-war campaign during the Boer War, is that it? Damn it, man, I took more personal risks to myself in my peace campaign than you're ever likely to meet in conducting your war.
This is not a criticism of your personal courage.
No, I'm not calling you a conscious. All I'm saying is that you're so damn mixed up in your humane views that you're totally unfitted to make a decision which involves total war. You over-identify yourself with a man on the front lines, Minister, which may be damn good humanity, but is thoroughly bad soldiering.
He's quite right, sir. At the back of your mind is the fear, the sensitiveness to loss of life. It's not that we don't personally respect you for this, but as a war minister, we think you'd make a damn fine minister of health.
That's the first thing you said this week.
All right, gentlemen. I'll put my cards on the table. I am afraid. I am frightened, I admit it. When this war started, I had a tussle with my conscience whether I should retire from politics altogether. I have imagination. I dream of bloodstains on my pillow. Is that bad? Is it bad to fear responsibility for millions of lives? Is it really better to be like you, to play with the lives of men like pieces on a chessboard? Which of us is better fitted to make a decision?
The answer is very simple. It's a question of arithmetic, isn't it? Better to lose 30,000 men in a single, bold, constructive offensive than to fritter away 100,000 lives in useless stalemate.
That's
the decision you are faced with. But you can't stand up to its logic. Well, there it is, Minister. I don't think there's any further point in staying.
30,000 men. Is that your estimate of our losses?
It's not merely my estimate, Minister.
30,000.
Three divisions given a ration, more or less. These are the pieces. And for that, a complete breakthrough. A couple of pawns for a queen, to use your comparison. There's no need to search your heart any longer in these circumstances.
We've consulted every expert, Minister. Every field technician.
You give me your word that your statisticians are entirely in accord with this?
Absolutely.
I'll get the files. Let's see the figures. I want everything. All the reports. Every computation.
Certainly. I have the papers here.
Jason, I want the ordnance and logistics file for General Crump's operation.
Yes, sir.
Here you are, Minister.
Yes. It's all very neat. Very reassuring. I want to make one final appeal to you. For the sake of our men at the front, for the sake of their wives and mothers, I put to you for the last time, are these the true estimates of our requirements to achieve a victorious offensive against the Germans in France?
I've given you our assurance.
No collective promises. I want yours and General Brewster's, and I want the signature of every man who had a hand in this report.
You have my assurance, Minister, and you shall have all the signatures you ask
for. A breakthrough in 48 hours and no more than a loss of 30,000 lives?
I've already said so, haven't I?
Brewster?
Yes, I agree with that estimate.
The file of the operation, sir.
On the question of supplying your needs, gentlemen, we haven't been altogether indecisive, as you will judge for yourself. These reports have also been ready for several weeks. Ordnance, munitions, transport, kit, down to the last roll of lavatory paper.
Oh, splendid.
Jason, they've been checked, of course.
Yes, sir.
By you two?
More than a week's work, sir, if you remember.
No errors, no miscalculations.
No, sir. There was one slight error, but it only concerned gumboots.
Gumboots. Gumboots?
Yes, sir. A minor matter, a mere typing slip, which I've since corrected in ink, as you can see here. A typist made a mistake in the noughts.
A mistake in the noughts?
Yes, sir.
In the noughts, Jason?
Sir.
Fire.
Sir?
Fire the whole department.
Minister.
Every able-bodied person to the front.
But they're all over 50, including the women.
I don't care if they're great-grandfathers. Do you know what it means to make a mistake in the noughts in time of war?
Well,
what do you suppose the Germans would do? They'd call it sabotage, treason.
Yes.
It would mean the firing squad.
Yes.
A mistake in the noughts?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Excuse that touch of irritability, gentlemen, but I'm sure you'll agree that it was necessary. There is no margin for error in these times.
Well, we shall make a last thorough check before we... You can pour me a stiff one, too, Brisbane.
Yes, of course. For you, Minister?
No, thanks. Now, have a quiet drink, gentlemen. I'm sure we have plenty to think about.
I am compelled to interrupt you, Minister.
Something important?
Sir, will you be attendant on the King's Messenger, if you please? Mr. Franklin Brown, courier of His Majesty. Gentlemen.
Come in, sir. I am pleased to receive you.
Mr. Morgan Evans, His Majesty has ordered me to hand to you this personal document and requested me to await your answer.
At once. Would you convey to His Majesty my compliments and inform him that I shall be privileged to attend on him at Buckingham Palace at 1 o'clock p.m. tomorrow, Thursday the 18th, as requested?
Thank you, sir.
Jason, offer this gentleman the hospitality of my home, and when he is ready to do so, speed him on his way.
I am obliged to you, sir.
Well, of course, it's an open secret by now. You've heard that the PM resigned this morning.
So that's it.
That's it, gentlemen. I don't think I'm speaking too optimistically, but I think that next time we meet, it may be at number 10.
You? Well, I...
Yes. Well, we have plenty to do.
Now, you won't stay to dinner? Well, another time, if not now. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, dear minister.
Ah, Owen! A drink on this.
I've just heard that little reception. Our congratulations in order.
How does it feel to be the son of a prime minister at a time when history with a capital H is being made?
Well, it's impossible to appreciate or believe that it's really taking place.
Yes. Ah, thanks. Better days.
Better days. Do you remember when we lived at number 11?
I think so.
I was an engineer working at Tilbury in those days, remember?
I do.
I used to come back to Downing Street in my working clothes. And one day I was just turning up from Westminster Underground when I was confronted by a barrier of police. The whole of the traffic was held up because of some VIP do. I tried to get past, but the cops wouldn't let me through. But I'm Owen Morgan Evans, the son of the Chancellor. I live at number 11.
And I'm Mary Pickford, said the cop.
It was no use. No one would believe me. After a while, I began to doubt it myself.
I always doubt it. I'm the son of a village shoemaker. I'm told that this humility is no good. Power, high office, should be ruthless, confident. What do you think?
But it's only those frightened of power who are fitted for it.
I suppose we ought to celebrate. After Thursday, that is.
Yes, you ought to.
Invite one or two people.
Yes, of course.
A quiet at home, but a small circle of select friends. James Barry.
And Melba.
Yes, of course. I suppose I could accompany her on the piano. And that lovely dancer they're all raving about. What's her name?
Pavlova.
Yes. And Dan Leno for the fun of it. And Beerbum Tree.
Do you like power, Father?
A little. No, a lot. But it frightens me, too. And that's good.
I'll go and tell Mother. Or would you rather tell her yourself?
You can tell her. But pretend that I don't know that you told her. She'd like to hear it from us both.
Put your feet up while I go and tell her.
Who's that?
Oh, Mr. Evans, may I
come in? Who is it? Oh, it's you again, Inspector. What are you doing prowling about in the garden? Yes, come in, come in. Well, what is it? What is it this time?
Sir, you don't happen to have on your staff a young female by the name of O'Connor.
O'Connor? I only know their Christian names. What about her?
Middle height, nice build, red hair, speaks with a slight Dublin accent.
She's not.
Sir, I have reason to believe that the IRA secret tribunal have sentenced members of the British government to death by assassination, and it is my duty to warn you.
Janie, I'm here.
Owen!
Oh, you're a brick to mix with this mob here. I could have met you at Scott's.
Oh, I couldn't wait. Let's have a look at you.
Oh. King.
Will you be staying over in town before going to Checkers? I've got tickets for the show at Daly's, and the table is booked, too.
First, let's take a quiet spin in Hyde Park. I'd like to get some London air in my lungs.
Is it just bad out there, as they say?
Then let's talk about it. I say, isn't that old Tom Williams on that soapbox?
He's a dreadful man. He makes all those anti-war speeches.
He was one of my father's staunchest chums in the old days. He used to face all the broken bottles on the platforms of the pacifist meetings.
Oh, let's drive on, please. You must be tired of war and politics.
Hello there. Jason. Owen. Where is everybody?
Well, your mother has gone for a short rest to Wales. We hadn't heard about your leave before she left.
How are you?
Where's the old man?
Well, he's having a short leave, too.
Whilst mother's away. What's going on? Where is he?
Oh, he's here, but I don't think it's possible to disturb him.
Upstairs?
Just take it easy. Now, you can't make any rules about a man like your father. He's got to be a law unto himself.
A fine bloody homecoming.
Owen, sit down. Now, there's no point in wearing yourself out over this sort of thing.
I'm not preaching. I'm just plain damn frightened. Does he know what's going on out there, the bloody mess we're in?
Of course he does. Much better than you do.
Well, then it makes it mucking worse. That's all I can say. Mucking worse.
Listen. The old man's got everything under control. Everything. He's been working 20 hours a day. He's not a machine. He's got to relax in his own way.
How long has he been on leave?
2 nights and a day.
I suppose the traffic on the staircase has been worse than bloody Piccadilly.
He can handle it. He's as strong as a buffalo, Owen, and you know it. He's seeing Crump in a little while. He's due to arrive at any time, and I can promise you this. He'll be ready for him. This is the crisis.
You say he's as strong as a buffalo. But a time will come when even his strength will pack in. These 40-hour jags of his would half kill a normal man. It's frightening. Forget your blind love of the man and see it straight. I wanted to see him, to talk to him. I've been making up my mind what to say. You know what the men call it? Crump's flypaper strategy. We're up to our eyes in it, stuck there in the mud. Sitting bloody clay pigeons for everything Jerry can throw at us. Why don't they put a stop to it? We've been fighting 50 days and we've advanced 2 miles. At this rate, it'll take us 60 years to get to Berlin.
We know all about that. Your father's been to France. He's seen everything. He's been everywhere. Talk to privates in the line as well as the French general staff. There's nothing he hasn't done.
Has he got rid of Krupp? That butcher's cost us the lives of hundreds of thousands of men. A year ago I told Father to get rid of him.
Don't you suppose he knows about Krupp? Don't you know that he's fought everybody in the cabinet about getting rid of him? Everybody. They're all scared stiff that it would bring down the government and lead to a military junta. The press are behind Krupp. Even the old man can't sack the whole of Fleet Street. And Crump's even got friends in the palace. How does one get rid of a soldier hero in wartime? What's your formula for that?
Why, in God's name, are the press behind Crump? Don't they know what's going on? Are they blind? Are they no war correspondents?
Crump has told them we're killing more Germans
Crump
than...
Crump and his phony statistics. What's happened? Has he been able to arrange an exchange of chartered accountants with the Hun? How can anyone believe such bloody lies?
Don't you see? They want to be blind. They have to be. This has got to be a victory. We can't admit all these sacrifices have been in vain.
Well, that's it then. To maintain the bloody myth of General Crump, our boys have to drown in the mud to get butchered on the barbed wire by the thousand every hour on the hour.
Owen. I swear to you, the old man's doing everything humanly possible to put an end to it. Crump has been summoned here. There's going to be a battle royal. I don't know what your father has up his sleeve, but I know it's bound to be one of his masterstrokes. Don't take any notice of this interlude upstairs.
He'll give General Crump the fight of his life.
Yes, if he has any strength left. Well, this is fine. Wonderful.
I'm famished. Jason, meat, ring for Jesse. Yes. Give me a good rare beef steak. Owen, my boy, another leaf. Splendid.
Take your coat off, Father.
Good.
Your jacket, take it off. I want to prove something to you.
Ah.
Sit down. Now, give me your hand.
You're going to put my hand down this time, eh? Well, maybe. 3 years in the fighting services may well have put snap in your braces. Jason?
Sir.
Crump arrived yet?
Not yet, sir.
That's it, my boy. Press on. I want to see him directly he arrives.
Yes, sir.
Messages, phone calls?
Northcliffe phone, sir. Mm. I told him you were resting.
Oh, grip of iron the boy's got. Infantry life, eh, son? But your strategy isn't much good, no. You never make your all-out effort at once, whilst I'm fresh. I've never been beaten at this yet. Winston was champion of the cabinet, but I was champion of the house. Old John Burns, the docker, used to wrestle like a bear. Never did him any good.
Oh, Jesse, yes. The master wants a good meal quickly. He's hungry.
Yes, sir. What will you have, Mr. Evans?
Now, let's see. One infantry general, well grilled, and a couple of ripe cavalry colonels, rare for entree. As for pudding, how about you, my dear? Oh.
Yes, sir. No. I mean, I'll get you something.
What did Northcliffe want, Jason?
I told him you couldn't come to the phone, and he said, all right, you'll do. Just give him a message from me. Say that I heard he's been trying to interfere in strategy. If there's any more of it, I'll break him.
Damned insolence. The king of Fleet Street. Crump runs to him every time he's in trouble. Now, Owen, my boy, would you like to try again?
Like a rock. Like a damned ruddy rock.
Hey. Anyone waiting for me?
Tom Richards is in the library.
Oh, Tom. Wonderful. I thought he was in jail.
Well, if you remember, sir, you told Tom when he was put in jail for his anti-war speeches that you hoped when he came out he'd have breakfast with you.
I said that?
Yes, sir.
Well, there you are, then. Put out an extra plate. Got you, Owen.
I think I've pulled a muscle. Oh, it's a trick. No one can be as strong as that.
How did I do it, then?
I think it's the way you hold your arm at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, that's it. So that the harder I press, the more firmly I push your elbow against the desk, the old cantilever principle.
Good boy, you spotted it. They always tire themselves out after a while, and then I make my counterattack.
You seen Crump? Mm. What about a bit of psychology there? Put his hand down. Challenge him to a duel across the desk with his jacket off.
What do you make of that, Jason? Hey, if they stare on me long enough, some of it wears off on them, doesn't it?
I've got to take my bath.
Stay for a while, my boy. Your mother isn't here at present.
You're not feeling lonely, Father.
Would it surprise you to know that I always feel lonely without your mother in the house?
Minister, I think I'll go and get on with the paperwork.
Yes, well, Owen, I don't have to ask how you are. You've given me the toughest contest since old Docker Burns.
Are you going to get rid of Crump?
That's my contribution to the war, Everett, my boy.
But can you, with Northcliffe, with the palace?
I got rid of Brewster, didn't I?
Yes. Father, why did Mother leave? Why did she go this time?
Don't lecture me, for God's sake. Don't question the way I fight my own private war against tiredness and every bone in my body, against frustration and fear and sheer nausea. It's my way of getting drunk to forget. Besides, the temptation is rather too much for me. Wasn't it Oscar who said he could resist anything except temptation? If you protest, I think you're jealous. As they all are who vilify me. Is it my fault I'm absolutely irresistible to women? They're all jealous of my success with the ladies.
Are you sure you're successful with women? Isn't it they who are successful with you?
What do you mean? Now, what the hell do you mean by that?
Is it you, Morgan Evans, the man they really fall for? Not the legend, the myth, the powerhouse of Whitehall and Downing Street? How long can you carry on like this? How much can your physique stand? 5 years? 10?
You don't see me through. For what I have to do to help win the war.
And afterwards? It'll all be in the melting pot by then. You'll be needed. All your experience and guile and drive and imagination.
Every man must fight his own private war with himself in his own way, Owen. That's what we have to do. We always have to fight on two fronts. On two fronts.
Father, you look all in.
Huh? You're not worried about me?
I'm going to have my bath.
How are you feeling, sir?
Oh, I'm all right. What's on your mind? Well, come on, let's have it. What trouble's been brewing whilst I've been away? What's the latest crisis?
Yes? Oh, good afternoon, sir. Just a moment, please.
It's you-know-who.
Hmm? Hello? Oh, it's you. Yes, I'm offering you the post. No? Not good enough, eh? All right, I know it's a junior job. What can you expect? You're all dead against any sort of job for you. What? Look, if you take that cigar out of your mouth for a couple of minutes, I'll be able to hear. All right, all right. What about the Ministry of Armaments? Will that satisfy you? Good. Leave it to me.
You meant to offer him that all along, didn't you?
All right, Jason, let's have it. What's been happening? Just list the danger spots.
Sir, I don't know if you're fully aware of the extent of the opposition to having our friend here back in the government. After the Dardanelles...
Don't give me history lessons,
please. I'd remind you that you've canvassed every member of the government. A coalition, sir, that includes all parties. And even your staunchest friends oppose the appointment. And within the last day or two, more than 100 members have put questions on the order paper. The Albert Hall has been hired for a mass meeting of protest. Dozens of others are being organized all over the country. The generals and the admirals are also dead against it, sir. Dead against it.
Now I know I must be right.
Finally, sir.
Finally?
May I contribute my view to this?
I don't see how I can possibly stop you. Besides, everyone else has.
Well, may I say this then, sir? There's no one in the government who could possibly challenge your leadership. But if he joins the cabinet in your old job, armaments, you'll have a dangerous rival.
I know that.
Well, then, sir, if you know all that, then for heaven's sake, why?
For a very old-fashioned reason, but one for which I don't propose to apologize. He's a friend who's proved his friendship and loyalty to me.
Mr. Evans... I see.
Is that all, Jason?
Yes. I suppose that is all. The general has arrived, sir.
Good. Show him in.
Sir.
And what is it?
I've known you for more than 10 years. And I realize that I've never really understood you. Till now. May I take your hand?
How do you do, Jason?
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Thank you.
General Crump, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Prime Minister. My apologies for the delay, but His Majesty was kind enough to ask me to stay to lunch.
Sit down. Don't fuss.
I wanted you to see this. Latest reports from HQ.
An expert sale executive general doesn't immediately produce his samples.
A bad joke, Prime Minister. Not in the best of taste. If I may say so.
You don't make me lose my temper so easily. I'll choose my own time to have a row with you. Sit down.
You don't want to see these reports.
I don't want to see your stories. I can read all the fiction I want in Lord Northcliffe's rags.
You're being offensive, sir.
In that case, I hope I succeed better than you do, General.
I haven't come here to suffer your insults.
Now sit down. I have something important to tell you.
Very well.
I sent for you, Crump, to tell you that the War Cabinet has approved my plan for a Supreme Allied Council representing all our allied nations. All strategy is to be coordinated by them in future.
You are a Supreme War Command run by foreigners? Is that the idea?
It will be run by generals best fitted to command, irrespective of their nationality.
Has it been approved by the War Cabinet?
Yes, it has.
And why the devil wasn't I told about this before? Aren't I entitled to know about such schemes? And why wasn't I invited to give my views to the Cabinet?
You're not a member of the War Cabinet.
This concerns me, my work, my campaign in France.
You're not a member of the War Cabinet.
You have deliberately gone behind my back, sir, and presented me with a fait accompli. That's typical, my goodness, typical of what I've had to put up with. A supreme command created over my head without my knowledge, without a chance to give my views.
You're not a member of the War Cabinet.
So that's it, sir, yes. You think you can build a pontoon over me and bypass all my efforts.
That's well put. That's very well put, General.
And where does this leave me, do you think? I'm supposed to be head of the armed forces of the Empire. Are British fighting men to be at the mercy of foreigners and their schemes?
If there's anything you seriously disagree with in the Supreme Allied Planning, you have the right to appeal to the British government.
To you? The fact will have helped very to me.
I am the elected constitutional head, General.
No, I will not put up with it. I demand a right to sit on this council myself.
Well, that's possible.
You agree to that? Then I don't want it. Oh, yes, I see it all now. If I go and sit on the Allied Council, you'll appoint a new field commander, and he'll have the real authorities and your approval to reject my strategy. And if I remain in the field, then those damn frog-eaters will clamp down on everything I want to do. Yes, that's it, isn't it? You create a special military House of Lords to kick me upstairs into it. If I won't go, you'll give them the real authority. It's diabolical, that's what it is, sir. Diabolical. You're a schemer. Well, I won't stand for it. You may not be aware, but there are still one or two people who have confidence in me, sir. Two can play this sort of game. Let me tell you this. At lunch today, the king said to me, Francis, he said, Francis, I was deeply moved by the press announcement of the latest success in the field.
You dare threaten me?
Threat, sir? I am merely reporting a private conversation about the latest communique as announced in the press.
You think you can frighten me with your Fleet Street friends? How dare you? How dare you, I say, threaten the head of government?
But you'll find that I don't make idle threats.
One of your friends from Fleet Street was good enough to warn me not to interfere in strategy. I'll show you how I deal with threats. Jason!
Now, what will you do to my friend, sir? Will you fire him, create a Supreme Allied Editorial Board, I suppose, for delinquent newspaper editors? Or do you really think that you can fight the very public opinion which you were good enough to explain was responsible for your appointment as Prime Minister?
Sir, got your notebook, Jason?
Yes, sir.
General, your friend from Fleet Street left a message telling me that if I don't watch out, he'll break me. Such insolence, I think you'll agree, needs to be punished. Your friend must be taught a lesson in future not to leave such messages. Jason, we won't be too severe this time. Six of the best will suffice to impress the lesson. Send a memo to the Ministry of Supply. I think we've discovered that we need quite a lot of wood pulp for the war effort. What does one need wood pulp for militarily?
Cartridge paper, sir.
Splendid. That'll do splendidly.
Cartridge paper.
Tell the Ministry of Supply to divert half the tonnage that goes to the paper mills to the Ordnance Department. The gentlemen of the press will have to do with rather smaller news sheets from now on. I think this may have the unfortunate effect of cutting down their profits from advertising revenue. How much do you think Lord Northcliffe would lose by this, General? $5 million a year? $10 million?
No.
An expensive message, wouldn't you say, Jason?
Yes, sir.
You were saying, General?
All right. All right. You're strong enough to twist Northcliffe's arm, eh? You're head of the government. But I would remind you that we are a monarchy. You haven't heard the last word in all this. Oh, no, Prime Minister.
I seem to recall that Cromwell was a Welshman.
Prime Minister!
How dare you threaten me with your palace intrigues? Why, in God's name, do you use some of that strategy of yours to fight the Germans instead of the French General Staff and me? Do you think I'll be your Judas goat forever out there? 48 hours, you said. 48 hours, and we'll break through the German lines and start rolling them back into the North Sea. That was more than 48 days ago. Where's your breakthrough? 30,000 men, you said. Less than 3 divisions will be sacrificed to achieve victory. We've lost 300,000 men so far, and we are still floundering in the mud. I remind you that 2 of the fighting men out there are my sons. A father is a tiger, General. Victories! Victories! Lies! Lies! Now, you be careful. I warn you to speak softly and think carefully from now on. You still got your job. You're still the great soldier hero. I won't take the glitter off your Wellington boots. But remember what I tell you now. When you go to war, General, pick your enemies very carefully. Someone you have a chance of beating. Because I fight dirty. I never went to Eton. My game isn't cricket. I know a few holes and low tackles you never dreamed of. Now pick up those papers and leave. The interim is over. I'll send you the War Cabinet's new orders tonight.
Damned upstart. Damned upstart!
Minister?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, it's you, Jason.
He's gone, sir. Please don't stand out in the garden in your slippers. It's wet.
It's all right. Just sit down and rest a moment. Must have been a tough meeting.
Your meal is ready. Shall I arrange for a tray here?
You're shivering. I'll fetch you a shawl, shall I?
No. You mustn't let them see me like that.
Look, Mr. Evans, old Tom Richards is waiting to see you. Now, why don't you have a drink with him for old Lang Syne, eh? He always had the trick of taking you out of yourself.
I'll be all right in a little while, Jason.
Well, if you don't feel like eating now, how about a snort, eh?
You're a good fellow, Jason.
I've cleared the decks. No more appointments at all for the rest of the day. I've stopped all incoming calls. After what you've been through today, there can't be anything important. How did it go? Crump looked as though he'd collided with a tank.
I wanted to tell him, to explain what I'd seen out there, what happened to me out there. But I was afraid I might lose control. Misery, gray hell, quicksand, the tattered, bleeding corpses on the barbed wire, like bait on a hook. I said to the young soldier who was showing me the battlefield, "Good God, can it be true? Is it really like this?" And he said to me, "It's worse further along. It's worse further along."
Sir, old Tom has some very funny stories about his rest cure in Brixton.
How did they treat him there? Good old Tom. We used to be on the same platform at one time. Remember my pacifist days during the Boer War?
The peace meetings, great stuff. Yeah. Pitched battles in front of the town hall in Birmingham and Bristol. Broken bottles, knuckle dusters. But you beat them, remember?
Yes, I was a pacifist in those days, and the broken heads didn't matter because I believed in that fight with all my heart. Why are people like that, Jason? I wanted to save them. Bloodshed in a useless war. Them and their brothers and their sons. And they turned on me like wolves. If only I could be sure. You're sure, Jason, that it is a threat to our homeland and not like the other one for a share of empire loot? If only I could be certain.
You see, Jason, there are always two conflicts, not one. Every man has to fight a war on two fronts, and the hardest enemy to defeat is the one you can't see. What's that?
Sounds like gunfire. Another air raid on the coast, I should think.
Yes, a raid, all right. Open the French windows, Jason.
It's funny. All that gunfire. And the birds are still singing. I can hear them still in the rookery. Sir, I'd like to open the champagne.
Champagne? We've got champagne, have we?
Yes. The French premier sent us a case with his compliments after your last visit to France.
Well, that's nice. That's nice of
you. I'll open a bottle for you.
Give it to old Tom. He's earned it, I think. They don't get very strong tea in Brixton, I'm told.
That caviar from the Tsar of Russia.
Ooh, that does sound formidable.
For old Tom. Shall I tell him you will have dinner with him later? I'll prepare him for some blistering anti-war arguments. Splendid, isn't it, sir? Our French ally sends us champagne, our Russian ally caviar, and we dine on them with a pacifist. I'll tell Tom it will be war to the knife and fork between you.
Fine, fine. And now, Jason, I'd like to be alone for a little while.
I understand, sir.
Father, I've brought you this old lantern.
Huh?
I knew you'd want to go out and watch the raid from the hilltop. It's even more exciting than a storm at sea.
You writing to your mother tonight?
Yes, probably.
I'd write too, and it's been a bad black day, and she can always tell. I'll send her a message from me to cheer her up.
It's been a bad day, Father.
I've had a theoretic success against Crump. Erected a war command to bypass his authority. Slung a pontoon over his head. History will know me as some sort of committee juggler extraordinary. Political chess grandmaster. But I know it doesn't always work. Trying to guide Crump from above is like backseat driving. He's still at the wheel. The murder will go on. On and on and on. Until they've all had enough. All been drunk and sated. Sickened. And history will tell us it was a splendid victory. Mine and his. All right. The fever must run its course. There's nothing we can do but try to apply a few cold poultices. Look, I want to say this to you, Owen. You can come on my technical staff. You've had 3 years of it out there. I don't care a hang what anyone thinks or says. Enough's enough.
No, thank you, sir. I'd rather remain with my friends.
Oh.
I didn't mean it like that, Father. I only meant just that. It was kind of you to suggest it.
I understand. Well. Well, it's a private battle. You must fight for yourself.
Oh, it hasn't been all bad and black. You couldn't get rid of Crumb. Not altogether, and not yet. But you faced another storm bravely and well today, sir. You reached out a hand and helped a friend out of the wilderness. Someone with the sort of leadership people might need one day. And perhaps history will be grateful to you for it, if it remembers. Go up on the hill and watch the rain. It's better than Beethoven.
Yeah. What's the lamp for? Have we no torches?
I thought this would suit you better. It's a ship's storm lantern. It's rather old, somewhat battered. There are a few rents in it. But it will give enough light to show you the way.
Yes. The road's steep and there are some treacherous places. But it might do. And the view from the summit. The view from the summit, Owen. Doesn't that make it worth a journey to the end of the night?
Jason!
In Storm Lantern, which was adapted for radio by Modest Mazayevich from a book by Richard Earl Lloyd George, the part of Morgan Evans was played by William Squire, Mrs. Evans, Noel Hood, and Owen Evans by David Buck. Jason was played by Lawrence Payne, Hugh Hughes by Hayden Jones, and Caroline Bishop by Ira Heath. General Brewster was played by Walter Fitzgerald and General Crump by John Justin.